Hello, I'm Joseph Kassa, and welcome to this podcast where the AI team does a deep dive into some application of systems thinking.
Think about any complex project you've been involved in. Could be software, maybe designing a product, even just organizing a big event, right? Wow. Chances are you've hit that headache of unclear or, shifting requirements. It's a problem that feels like it's been around forever.
Decades, yeah. Our sources are saying decades. And it's a frustration I think many people listening will definitely recognize.
It really is quite the paradox, isn't it? Because, project management keeps getting more sophisticated. We've got more processes, more tools.
Right, more oversight. You'd think all that structure would mean fewer problems with requirements.
Exactly. But the evidence suggests the basic challenges, they're still there.
So they persist. Yeah.
It's like we keep adding layers, but the core issue just won't budge. And here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay.
Some folks, like in agile or object-oriented systems engineering, they're even asking if we need all these written requirements in the first place.
Which really makes you step back and ask, okay, fundamentally, why is it so hard to get good requirements?
That's exactly the question we're tackling today. This isn't about, quick fixes or the latest shiny tool.
No, we've really immersed ourselves in expert insights, research going back quite a way, looking at videos, detailed PDFs.
To really unpack the basic reasons for this persistent problem, our mission is to give you a clearer picture of why good requirements are still such a challenge.
So we're not just looking at symptoms, we're diving deep for the root causes.
And one framework that popped up in the sources calls this a messy or wicked problem.
Right. Meaning, look, smart people have been trying for a long, long time, and there's no simple one-size-fits-all solution. It's complex.
It's a puzzle. Lots of connected pieces.
Absolutely. And this isn't new. Yeah. Our sources say this struggle with poor requirements, it's been going on for at least 30, maybe even 50 years.
50 years. Wow. With not much real improvement across the board.
Yeah. So to kind of dissect this, one expert we looked at uses this helpful five-part template, almost like a research lens.
Okay. A five-part template. Let's unpack that. What are the key bits it uses to, understand the problem?
Well, it's designed to look at the current mess and then figure out a better future state.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with the undesirable situation.
Okay.
Then it looks at the underlying assumptions we might be making.
Right.
That helps picture a feasible, conceptual, future desirable situation.
Yeah.
And from there, you can pinpoint the real problem to solve.
And then finally, the potential solution.
Okay.
Makes sense.
Exactly.
So let's apply it here. The undesirable situation for requirements. What's that?
It's pretty much what we started with. This persistent, widespread issue of poor requirements hanging around for, 3 to 5 decades.
Despite all the efforts to fix it.
Right. And the central assumption, the sort of working hypothesis the experts suggest.
Yeah.
There's basically that while we have a lot of knowledge out there, papers, books, training on how to do requirements well,
mm-hmm.
the people actually doing the work, the requirement engineers, they aren't being, let's say, adequately trained or educated to use that knowledge effectively or the tools available.
So the know-how exists maybe on paper, but the practical application is lacking.
That's the idea. It's falling short.
Okay. And that leads to the feasible, conceptual, future desirable situation. What does that look like?
Well, the desired state is one where we've clearly identified the specific knowledge and skills engineers need for good requirements.
Right.
And importantly, where we recognize that current training often doesn't effectively teach some, or maybe even all, of this crucial stuff.
So it points directly to a training gap as a key problem.
Exactly. The goal is to figure out what's missing in that education piece.
Now, one of the things that really jumped out, it was genuinely surprising.
What was that?
Was the basic lack of a consistent definition for a requirement itself.
Ah, yes. This is where that continuum perspective from one of the videos is, crucial. You just assume, wouldn't you?
Totally.
For something so fundamental, there'd be a standard definition for like a basic textual requirement statement, but nope. Astonishingly, no.
Seriously, we can't even agree on the absolute building blocks. Can you give us a flavor of how definitions of, vary?
Oh, absolutely. Back in 1990, it was like a condition or capability needed by a user or something the system must meet.
Okay.
By 99, it shifted a bit. A statement translating a need or constraint.
Mm-hmm.
Then 2004, it's something obligatory, capabilities the system must have. 2006, more formal, transforming needs into an agreed obligation.
It's getting more complex.
And then incredibly, as recent as 2022, the IRB definition was just things to be built or evolved.
Things to be built. That totally leaves out the user wants or needs part, doesn't it?
Completely. It's a huge range from focusing on user needs to just the stuff we make.
Yeah.
It really shows a lack of consensus on what we're even doing.
Wow. And it doesn't stop there, right, with just the single definition. We also have all these types of requirements.
Exactly. You've got business requirements, functional ones, what it does, non-functional, how well it does it, like performance, security.
Stakeholder requirements, transition requirements.
And that continuum perspective points out, okay, we have categories, but the links between them, often really unclear.
Murky.
Yeah, there's overlap, sometimes conflicts. Like you mentioned, the IRB's quality requirements basically cover what most people call non-functional requirements.
So this lack of a shared vocabulary just adds more potential for confusion, misunderstandings.
Absolutely. It's another layer.
Yeah.
So yeah, a big takeaway, even the basic idea of requirement isn't consistently defined. That's bound to cause problems.
Operating without a shared language sounds like a recipe for trouble. Okay, so beyond definitions, the sources also talked about different fundamental approaches or paradigms for how requirements engineering actually gets done.
Yes, this is a really critical distinction. One video outlined two main paradigms, let's call them A and B, plus a kind of hybrid. Paradigm B, which they suggested is maybe more common in practice, usually starts by just gathering requirements, eliciting, documenting what stakeholders say.
Right off the bat.
Yeah. Then maybe a concept of operations or a model, then architecture, then design.
And paradigm A, how's that different?
Paradigm A takes a more foundational route. It starts with really digging into understanding the stakeholders' underlying needs.
Before writing requirements.
Exactly. Only after you've developed and really check a model of those needs do you go to conceptual architecture, then formulate requirements, then design.
So A focuses on the why first before the what. B jumps more into the what.
That's a good way to put it. The core difference is that upfront emphasis in A on truly getting the fundamental reason behind the requests.
That seems, well, more logical, doesn't it? Understanding the real need first. So why is paradigm B potentially a problem?
Well, the risk is if you start with wants that might be superficial or not fully understood, the requirements you write and then the whole system you build based on them could be misaligned with what stakeholders actually need right from the start.
You're building on potentially shaky ground.
Exactly.
And then there was this hybrid paradigm mentioned. How does that fit in?
The hybrid approach often starts by developing an operations concept, a document or model. Then that directly informs the requirements.
Okay.
And those requirements might then be used to build another, maybe more detailed model, which then leads to architecture and design. What's interesting there is the question it raises. If you've already made a model of how it works,
right,
why translate that into text requirements only to maybe translate those back into another model later?
Yeah, that does seem like an extra step, potentially losing something in translation each time.
It could, yeah. And that line of thinking feeds into the arguments for maybe reducing or even ditching written requirements in some cases.
Interesting. The video also touched on why the waterfall model gets taught so much, even though real projects are rarely that neat.
That's right. Waterfall, with its clear sequential phases, it's simpler for teaching, right? It gives a structured view.
Easier to grasp initially.
Yeah, trying to show all the messy feedback loops and iterations in real projects.
Mm-hmm.
That can be overwhelming if you're just learning.
But the danger is it gives this false sense of linearity that doesn't match reality, doesn't it?
It can, yeah. It's crucial to know that real projects are usually way more dynamic. But for teaching, it's a starting point.
A simplified map for a complex territory. Okay, shifting focus a bit. One source looked at the day-to-day stuff requirements engineers do, especially in that paradigm B world. What was the fundamental issue there?
The operational perspective. It basically says that the typical activities eliciting requirements, writing them down, often happen without a clear reference point.
Meaning
there's no set framework or benchmark to check if the activities you're doing are, one, complete, and two, correct.
Ah, I see.
Just because you see people doing certain things consistently doesn't automatically mean those are the right things or all the necessary things.
That's a really sharp point. We could be busy doing stuff, but maybe not the effective stuff.
Precisely.
And this leads us right into the speaker's own research and these top five reasons for why we keep struggling with requirements. Let's dig into those. Number one was about identifying stakeholders systematically.
Yes. The research really points to a weakness here. A lot of the literature uses language like includes or including when listing possible stakeholders.
Right. I've seen that.
The problem is that's not a systematic way to make sure you got everyone. It doesn't guarantee a complete set.
So key people, key needs might just get missed from the very start.
Exactly. It's often too ad hoc. That's a key insight. Stakeholder ID needs to be more methodical.
Okay, so we might be missing crucial input right out of the gate. What's the second reason?
Second big gap.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough training in how to properly elicit and elucidate the requests. It's more than just asking, what do you want?
It's about the technique.
Yeah, effective questioning, active listening, probing deeper to get the real needs, the why, behind the request.
Makes sense. You got to draw out the real story, not just the headline request. And the third reason?
The third is that critical step of converting those initial requests into genuine stakeholder needs.
The translation piece.
Right. It needs analysis, critical thinking, spotting the difference between a surface want and a fundamental need the system has to meet.
That sounds like a really key transformation step that maybe gets rushed or skipped.
Often overlooked, yeah. It's understanding the why behind the what. So what's number four?
Number four, surprisingly, is about the actual writing of the requirements.
The writing itself.
Yeah. The source points out there are specific grammatical rules, vocabulary considerations for crafting clear, unambiguous requirement statements.
Huh. Like sentence structure and word choice.
Exactly. And that level of detail focusing on the precise language apparently isn't often taught explicitly in standard training.
I have to admit, I never really thought about the grammar of a requirement as a specific skill to be trained. That's, yeah, fascinating.
Right. And finally, the fifth key reason.
The fifth is about maximizing the probability of getting a complete set of baseline requirements at the start.
Baseline, not all requirements.
Exactly. There's this misconception about getting everything up front, which is usually impossible because needs change, right?
True.
The crucial thing is nailing down a solid, complete initial set. But training often doesn't give people the methods to do that well.
Leading to gaps later on.
Yeah, omissions that cause problems down the line. It's about getting that foundation right, knowing things will evolve.
These top five really do highlight some fundamental gaps, don't they? The video also mentioned, just briefly, how the tools have evolved over time.
Yeah, a quick history lesson. We went from paper documents, obviously, to computer databases for tracking requirements.
Standard stuff now.
Right. And then even quite early on, there were attempts to use AI, basic AI, to help spot poorly written requirements.
Oh, really? Like what?
NASA had a tool called RM. Others mentioned were Quality Gateway, Precept Counselor. And the speaker highlighted Ephrod D, later Tiger Pro, as maybe one of the first practical uses of AI in systems engineering, like an expert system analyzing requirements.
It's fascinating that AI was being looked at for this so early. What held those early tools back, I wonder? Must have been computing power, or maybe the AI wasn't quite there yet?
Probably a mix of things, yeah. Technology limitations, maybe integration challenges. But it shows people were thinking about automating checks for quality quite some time ago.
Interesting. Okay, so back to fixing the core problem, those training gaps. The expert talked about a solution using workflow analysis. Can you break that down?
Sure. The idea is to use workflow analysis to build a reference model. Think of it as a kind of ideal step-by-step educational map of how you should develop good requirements.
An ideal path.
Right. It starts with capturing stakeholder wants, then, crucially, analyzing and transforming those into real stakeholder needs.
The conversion step again?
Exactly. Those needs then form the basis for drafting initial system requirements, which might be, you know, poorly written at first.
Okay, first draft.
Then you refine those drafts into well-written requirements, aiming for good, high-quality ones.
Makes sense.
The model also explicitly includes weeding out requests for things people don't actually need and also uncovering important needs they didn't even mention.
The unarticulated needs.
Yeah.
Right. So how does this ideal map, this reference model, help identify what's wrong with current training?
Well, you compare this ideal workflow to what's typically taught.
The gap analysis.
Precisely. And the research suggests that while step one, talking to stakeholders, getting wants is usually covered somewhat. The really crucial later steps, converting wants to needs, the actual writing of good requirements, ensuring that complete baseline set, those are often poorly taught, if at all.
Which lines up perfectly with those top five reasons we just discussed.
Exactly. It connects the dots.
Now, the second source we looked at, the PDF, it went even further, didn't it? Mentioning other areas often missed in training.
It did. Beyond the top five, it listed several other really important concepts that often don't get enough airtime.
Like what?
Things like really understanding the difference between generic system requirements, the kind that apply broadly.
Like security standards, maybe?
Right. And system-specific requirements, the ones unique to this particular system you're building.
Got it.
Another is the idea that one development methodology doesn't fit all projects.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bespoke system versus mass market product. Very different needs.
True.
It also stressed knowing the three domains: problem, solution, implementation, and the three situations, as is the future, coming up, yes, and the transition between them.
Lots of threes there.
Seems so. And importantly, the three main reasons requirements change: forgotten baseline needs, genuine evolution of needs, or just changes in our understanding of the needs.
That's useful framing for why change happens.
And finally, understanding how all the different types of requirements actually link together and relate to each other.
It really sounds like there's a much richer, deeper body of knowledge for requirements engineering than you might get in a typical course.
That seems to be the argument, yeah.
Yeah.
Much broader than often taught.
And that second PDF, it also mentioned a specific program aiming to fill these gaps, didn't it?
It did, yeah. It briefly introduced a program designed specifically to tackle these identified gaps in training.
What were the key features highlighted?
Well, it mentioned affordability, flexibility, using an Evercourse format, which sounded like a mix of live and self-paced stuff.
Okay.
Catering to different learning styles and keeping class sizes small for interaction,
mm-hmm.
plus some bonus access to related topics like problem solving, systems engineering, project management.
So positioned as a way to get that deeper knowledge that standard training might miss.
Essentially, yes. Presented as a potential solution to acquire that more complete skill set and understanding.
Right. Framed as a targeted way to equip people properly.
Precisely.
Well, this has been really illuminating. A proper deep dive into why getting requirements right is still such a persistent challenge.
It really has. Mm. It's clear the problems are often systemic, aren't they? Rooted in training gaps, lack of shared understanding, fuzzy definitions.
Yeah, and different fundamental approaches bumping up against each other. It highlights the complexity in what looks, maybe from the outside, like it should be straightforward.
Exactly. Lack of consistent definitions, those different paradigms, the big gaps in education, it all adds up.
So, as we wrap up, here's something for you, the listener, to really chew on.
Okay.
Given this long, long history of struggling with requirements, and think about how complex systems and software are getting.
They're only getting more complex.
Right. So how might our basic approach to defining managing requirements, how might that need to fundamentally shift in the future?
That's a big question.
Should we be taking some of those, quote, radical ideas more seriously?
Mm-hmm.
You know, reducing or even ditching written requirements sometimes.
And what about the role of newer tools? AI keeps evolving, and maybe these more comprehensive educational approaches we touched on.
How will they shape the future? It definitely feels like, well, an ongoing journey, doesn't it? Constant learning, trying to improve.
Absolutely. It really demands we critically look at how we do things now, stay open to new ideas, new methods,
and keep striving for that deeper understanding of the user needs and how best to capture and manage them.
Couldn't agree more. It's a continuous process.
I hope you enjoyed today's deep dive. Why not take a moment and join the discussion in the LinkedIn group, Tackling Complex Problems? Take care.